We get it. Distractions happen. That's why we designed the fully electric, full-sized Volvo EX90 with the latest technology to keep you and those around you safe. Its two-sensor driver understanding system is designed to prevent distractions and help you stay focused. Reserve your Volvo EX90 today. Learn more at volvocars.com/US.
Ryan Reynolds here for, I guess, my 100th Mint commercial. No. I mean, honestly, when I started this, I thought I only have to do like 4 of these. I mean, it's unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month. How are there still people paying 2 or 3 times that much? I'm sorry, I shouldn't be victim blaming here. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/save whenever you're ready.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
Other realtors have vacant homes. At Pest Properties, ours come occupied and ready to infest. Looking to relocate your larvae? Try the Petri Residence. This rustic home features thousands of crevices to squirm in through, vaulted ceilings for our wall crawlers, and an outdoor bird bath teeming with mosquito eggs. So kick up your 6 hairy legs and sign today.
Before pests move in, Terminix it. With over 95 years of experience, we'll help keep your home off the pest market. Visit Terminix.com today.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Hey everyone, welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast, and welcome back for our third draft recap show, our third and final draft recap show for the 2024 draft. Tonight you've got me. We're also joined by Steve and Thomas. Ken is feeling a little under the weather, so it's just us three tonight. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good.
We've survived another draft season. Hooray. We did it.
I don't know how much longer I can do it, man.
Steve, you still have like several million words to write, so Godspeed. But for us, it's largely wrapped up here. So we'll go through the day 3 picks. We'll stop and do some reflections on the draft as a whole, both for the Mets and then, you know, briefly on the rest of the league. And then, you know, in the coming weeks, we'll start to hopefully see these guys trickle into the system. I imagine a lot of the arms will be shut down because that's just what teams do now. We'll probably see a slate of promotions, a few more UDFAs, you know, things like that. All the good second half talking points. And yeah, should be a fun rest of the year. That's hopefully a bit less hectic. On that note, let's get started. And before we go into the day 3 picks, Steve, since you missed us, or we missed you rather, yesterday, did you have any big takeaways from day 2? Anything you liked? Anything you really didn't like? Anything that jumped out at you?
Well, I'm in the process of writing everything. So I finished the number six pick, Corey Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Dome, I mean, you know, the guy's hurt, so it is what it is. Eli Serrano, not really a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Snyder, you know, typical prep shortstop with lots of potential. So, I mean, not good, not bad. He just is. Hopefully his career takes off.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Collins, I do like. I think that might have been a little bit of a steal. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's, like, amazing.
We've got another Corey Collins fan. That's all I wanted to hear, frankly. Reading between the lines, Steve, it sounds like you're generally not a fan of something that the Mets did on the first 2 days, and indeed which has continued on the third, and we'll talk about that in a second. But it doesn't seem like you're a big fan of these injured pitcher picks.
I mean, on like I said, I've only really in depth gone from 1 to 6. So 7 through 20, there's varying degrees of familiarity I have with these guys. I'm not going to say that this is like a terrible draft for me, in my opinion. But, you know, I think we might have been spoiled the last like 2 years or whatever it was. What was it? Let's see. 2023 last year was like really good. The year before year, I think, was pretty good. Yeah, 2021 with Kumar Rocker. That was the last time that it was like bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a couple of years that we've had some pretty good drafts. And this year I'm not feeling anything at all here.
Okay.
I'm pretty down on Benj, having done a lot of in-depth research into him. Santucci's okay, but there's the injury risk. You know, Dome, same thing, there's the injury risk. Serrano, I think, is overrated. Snyder's, you know, like I said, a wild card. Collins is really the first guy that I'm like, okay, cool. But, I mean, he's a first baseman. Senior first baseman, you know what I mean? So, that is what it is.
Well, this is going to be interesting, because I think we might have some diversity of opinions here on the quality of this draft. And we can circle back on this once we go through the day three picks a bit more. Mm-hmm. So on that note, let's jump into the day three picks. We start in round 11 with second baseman Nick Roselli, a junior out of Binghamton University. So local guy, probably has gone to a couple Rumble Ponies games, I would imagine, given that been... Like, what else is there to do in Binghamton, frankly? I've never been, but I assume there's not a ton aside from baseball games and other baseball games. He hit 389, 492, 738 in 128 plate appearances this year with 8 home runs. This is working around, I'm slipping immediately on what the injury was. He missed a good chunk of the year with injury, came back and just kept
mashing. He hurt his hand. He broke his hand.
That's it. Yep. Which makes it almost more impressive. We know those injuries can linger. So dude hit on both sides of a annoying injury. Believe he was named second team all conference despite playing only 27 games or something along those lines. Really nice season. Obviously a small school, second base only profile, college performing here, but I think there's a lot to like under the hood. More walks than strikeouts, significant power spike this year. The exit velocity data is pretty good. The contact data and particularly the contact rate against velocity is good for the demographic. Not elite, but good. Disciplined, you know, lots of walks, limited chase. I am honestly annoyed at myself for not catching this guy pre-draft, because this is very much my shit.
Oh, yeah. This is a Lucas guy.
Yeah. This is going to be like my new Matt Rudick for the next 6 years. And indeed, the Matt Rudick dream might be kind of dead, given that he's been basically league average as a 26-year-old in AA this year, which is less than ideal. But look, I think we've talked about this. I remember us having this conversation in depth around the DeAndre Smith pick. Steve, what year was that? Is that 2022 or 23? You'll remember better than I will.
I think it's 22.
22. All right, let's go with 22. And I think the idea there was, you know, drafting a college performer. 22. Okay, cool. Drafting a college performer out of a big school like USC, you're not seeing anything that everybody else hasn't also seen, right? Like, everyone's watching USC. I'm gonna venture a guess. There's not as many eyes on Binghamton. Just a wild guess on that front. And I think because of that, it's more likely you've actually found something that other people missed. Given the underlying data, there does seem to be some promise here. And you know, some these guys don't always hit, but sometimes they do, and you wind up with like a nice little Brendan Donovan, or, you know, just a bench. Brendan Donovan's like the high end outcome of this. He's very good. But, you know, I like this a lot.
Yeah, it's taking a swing on a guy from a small school in a smaller conference who just destroyed it, seeing if he was just someone who could have played somewhere else and he just didn't, or he was just a guy who was too good for that level but not good enough to do anything else. But it's a better swing than most of the college hitters you'll get at 11 or in round 11. There's also a very funny video that I found
Oh.
The reason why I know that he broke his hand is he was like, after the surgery, it was his hamate. He was like, I'm gonna hit a, he was on the like the anesthesia, and he was like, I'm gonna hit a home run in my first at bat. And everyone's like laughing at him, and then he hits a home run in his first at bat
Hell yeah.
and half. All right, yeah, excellent. That's the this is that's exactly the kind of oh God, I
Brawler
sound like
attitude we need here.
yeah, I sound like Buck Showalter. This is the attitude you want in your gritty second baseman 11th round pick, you know?
He's also local from
Exactly.
Long Island, so like
Another
that's cool
short
too.
king, you know. We the Mets have drafted a lot of short guys in recent years. I believe Roselli's only 5'8". You know, gives you those short levers, and if you, this is the interesting thing, right? Like the Cape performance was not good in the 2 years he went, so the wood bat stuff wasn't there. And prior to 2024, he was not hitting for power. This is essentially a bet in my eyes that this little 27 game power breakout was real. Because if it is, this is a better player than one you take in the 11th round. It could also just be 27 games of bullshit because it's 27 games, right? So that's the roll of the dice you're making here, and you know, I'm all for that.
It's 11 rounds, so you can do that. It doesn't
Yep.
matter.
Yep. And
Yep.
he's gonna sign for like slot or close to it, so. So Roselli was an interesting one to kick things off. We have a couple of whatever picks next. Ethan Lanthier, a junior out of Kansas, you know, reliever, presumably a guy they're going to try to convert to starting. I didn't scout Lanthier personally before this. I've not found anyone who has any, you know, detailed information on him. Again, I think we're all willing to show a little deference to the Mets in terms of their pitching selections at this stage.
He has a high spin rate fastball and a high sweeper.
Cool.
And yeah,
Does
I
he
mean,
have a
what can
third
you do?
pitch?
Change up, but
Okay.
occasionally is mixed in there.
I mean, third pitches are less important than they used to be, but probably something you want. Look, I'm sure some scout made a pitch about him being convertible to starting. It probably won't work out because most of the times it doesn't. It's a fine, you know, junior to take in the 12th.
He probably hit some markers in their model too that
Yep.
said take this guy over whoever else because of anything, all the things that go into that. There's so many things.
Something stands out, take him, whatnot.
Obviously not something you want to be drafting in the second round. Again, lol, Angels, but fine to take at this stage and let your development apparatus go to work. We're gonna say almost the exact same set of things about RJ Gordon. He's a senior out of Oregon. Excuse me, as I developed the hiccups in the middle of the podcast. Fantastic. I've got no strong opinions on Gordon. Copy paste everything we just said about Lanthier there. Steve, you got any fancy fastball metrics for us there? I didn't uncover anything on that front.
No, I don't actually. He is
Cool.
a
Great.
he's a mystery.
Yeah. I mean, he's a senior, so he might be even cheaper. Cool. Cheaper than Lanthier. So yeah, whatever. Good. Have at it, Eric Jaegers. I'm sure you'll do something. Then we get to the 14th round. This is the next interesting pick. They went with Tanner Witt, a senior out of Texas. Witt is a name you may be familiar with. Drafted out of high school and didn't sign. I believe there was some, you know, first 3 round buzz, even first round buzz early on in his college career. There was an impressive fastball, big downer curveball, like old school curveball. Unfortunately, had Tommy John and has not had a clean recovery at all. Hasn't even got. He used to sit, you know, mid to upper 90s. Now he's sitting in the high 80s. The breaking ball isn't there. He got destroyed this year, mostly in relief. I believe he gave up. He had an ERA of 9 over 20 innings. Had an additional surgery to clean up some scar tissue. So rough road back. And who knows what's still left in here. What do you guys think of this pick, in the 14th?
I think it's an interesting shout in the 14th that I wouldn't want to take on day one or two, but I think it's just one of those things where it's fun at the time, at the place that they did it. Because even he was getting first round buzz, and I kind of always thought that was a little over the top for him. But yeah, like it's like a round 2-3 arm that before Tommy John, and like the Tommy John recovery has been really bad. I'm not going to sit here and say that it hasn't, but to get that at the in the 14th to see what happens next with it, I don't see a problem with it really, because even if he ends up 90% of what it was, that's a way better pitching prospect than you'd probably find at 14. And if you didn't, then most 14 round picks aren't going to work out anyway. So I like the swing there, because otherwise you're just taking some guy who fits, who hit a bunch of markers in your model, like everyone else they took in this draft. You know what I mean? So, and on this day, I mean, so I think it's just an interesting shout.
I mean, the Mets have an impeccable record when it comes to Tommy John recovery. So I'm down.
I think Steve is getting at the point that sticks in my mind. And I've not read any studies on this. I would love to know. We have a pretty good idea of what the recovery rate from Tommy John is. I don't know that we have a great idea of what the recovery rate is once you've failed your first Tommy John, right? And in that sense, this is a worse profile than someone who has just had the surgery, right? Because a guy who's just had the surgery has a probability of coming back, you know, good recovery, and then also a probability of coming back with a bad recovery, and then all the subsequent complications. What's at the bad recovery stage? And off the top of my head, I'm struggling to recall someone who, having had a bad Tommy John recovery that required this level of consternation, really made it work. I mean, you can point to Zach Wheeler or Steven Matz in the Mets' own system, but I'm not sure either of them had this level of trouble coming back. So I'm a little bit concerned, but to your point, Thomas, it's difficult to, again, unless you're drafting like the DeAndre Smith types here, it's difficult to really call any pick in the 10 plus rounds bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I think about it with him is you're just taking every pick on day three is taking a swing on something. Either it's the metrics that pops in your system, either it's a pitch that you see with a hitter, it could be an approach or a hits for a lot of power, whatever. You're still taking a swing here. I think it's just a different way to do that with Witt, where I don't think with day three of the MLB draft and how many people have already been taken and how many picks there are, even with it going down from 40 rounds like it used to be, you're pretty much getting who you want. Like, if you're not picking these people, it's because you don't like them, I would assume. Like, you're not really getting sniped on round 16 or whatever. You know? Like, so round 14, you're like, okay, there's no one really here that we find interesting. Let's take the guy who used to be a day one or two pick and then had a really bad injury, recovery. Because if it doesn't work, if it works out, then cool. Like, that's a really interesting way to add to your pitching depth, and if it doesn't, well, the Mets have made pitchers left and right, so it probably won't we probably won't even notice it. So that's kind of how I feel.
All very fair, and again, I have quibbles with it, but I'm not calling it bad. It's
I mean, the quibbles is like, can the Mets fix a guy who's they can't even fix their own Tommy John guy?
No, they can't. No, but Matt Allen cries also in a corner.
This is also years after that, and it's a new regime, and we haven't seen that many Tommy Johns with the current Mets organization, and like Drew Smith will be a good marker of that, but we won't know that until 2026, and with Drew Smith and his age, it might not matter. He might not be a Met at that point. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, is he coming back this year, or is that next year? I don't remember when Ziegler had the surgery.
Next year, I believe it is.
Yeah, so if Ziegler comes back and looks good, then it's like, oh, maybe the Mets have figured something out here. Maybe the Mets have turned a corner in a way that we just haven't had it. There's no evidence for this yet, because a lot of we're talking about Zach Wheeler. Like, that was almost 10 years ago, you know.
I did not need to know that.
Think about it. Like, that was 2014. That was 10 years ago. And
when did Stearns get hired and everything get
this offseason?
This offseason.
Okay. So then, Ziegler is the most recent minor league guy to get Tommy John. I was thinking Joel Diaz, but that was like last year.
That was before.
Whatever. So yeah, it was before.
So like we have to even see what the Stearns organization does in terms of Tommy John recoveries first.
I'm sure there have been some, but I'm struggling to come up with Brewers who had.
I'm trying to think too. It's a lot of like shoulder stuff with the Brewers.
Yeah, Yeah, it's like everyone I think of there is. I guess Ethan Small had Tommy John, right? But he had shoulder stuff first. Like, Gasser just got TJ. Yeah, Woodruff blew out his shoulder. So yeah, that's odd that. The problem with a lot of these injury things is just a small sample because it's not a meaningful number of players. But who knows if they've stumbled upon something there or not. Point is, you know, some upside in this pick, not a bad selection in the 14th. But yes, another injured arm. We will continue that trend as we go to the 15th with Owen Woodward. He's a senior out of University of Houston. That name may sound familiar to you. Thomas, do you want to explain why that name might sound familiar to some people?
Well, I think he was a JUCO player at this point, right?
Yes.
Someone hit a home run off of him, and he got real mad about it and just clocked the guy rounding third before he crossed home plate, and it went very viral. And
that was a full-on Goldberg spear.
Like, quite literally. I think the kid wasn't even looking. Like, I think he was looking the other way, and he just clocked him. It was one of those. But as soon as I heard the name, I was like, that sounds a little familiar. And then I was like, oh, that's why it sounds a little familiar.
Yep. Channeled his inner Kyle Farnsworth there. Just absolutely decked the guy. Who did Farnsworth do that to against the Reds when he was with the Cubs? I forget who it was that he just absolutely flattened. Anyway, that's what Woodward did when he was in this JUCO school. This is in 2002, transferred to Houston and was flashing some impressive stuff. I believe, you know, his last outing, 5 innings, 11 strikeouts, and then throws a pitch and it is immediately like jumping on the mound, holding his elbow, like UCL shot. I'm not 100% sure that Tommy John was confirmed.
I don't know what he actually hurt. I don't think it ever came out.
There was news immediately after that it was probably UCL. He didn't pitch again. Sometimes this news doesn't come out till post-draft for various reasons. I think a safe assumption is that he's a Tommy John guy, so we're not going to see him till, you know, late 2025. But there was some impressive stuff here. I saw some of the metrics on it were very nice. Again, same vein of pick. Guy with stuff, hoping on health. You know, the Met draft class put together might have 3.5 healthy UCLs combined. So just add them to the... Maybe they can share. Maybe they can swap between starts or something and extend things that way. Any major thoughts on Woodward here? Or are we just going to wind up repeating ourselves with the same ideas we've stated already?
Yeah, there's not much new territory.
Nothing new.
No. Well, I do think there's a little bit of new stuff to say about the guy they took at 16, and that's Josh Bloom, I'm going with. He's out of USC, entirely as a reliever, I think. 1.87 ERA over 27 games, 32 innings pitched. Had 12 strikeouts per nine, three walks per nine, just under three walks per nine. You know, this is a pure reliever in college, but again, another obvious conversion candidate. Thomas Nistico had actually tweeted out his stuff metrics earlier on in the season. The fastball shape is really, really nice. Something we can definitively say is there's a very nice fastball shape here. That's something the Mets drafted a lot of last year, and it's generally been a decent strategy. There's also a good cutter and slider, you know, a little bit inconsistent, but they flash clear. You know, you're talking about one very good pitch and two other pitches that show signs. That's a clear conversion candidate. I think that's a very nice pickup here in the 16th. And as far as we know, his UCL is functional.
Yeah, he was pretty healthy. Like he had a lot of I think he had multi-inning saves too. Mm-hmm. Like I know they used him as a reliever, but it wasn't like he was just pitching the three batters and sitting down. Like he would go two innings sometimes, stuff like that. So obviously that doesn't mean that he could go 7 or 8, but there's some length in the arm that just wasn't used at USC. So it's an interesting it's an interesting bet, especially this late. And then the fallback is if you draft a reliever in the 16th round, nobody's going to care. Everyone's going to be like, cool.
A major league reliever in the 16th round is an objectively good outcome. Yeah,
good outcome. Like, even if it's like a middle reliever, an up and down guy, that's a good outcome. So there's a lot of interesting things with him. He's someone to keep an eye on, I think.
Yep, I agree. I like him more than, and this is partially because we just don't have the info on Lanthier and Gordon to the same extent, but he seems like a better arm than both of them. I'm a little surprised at the ordering here, but, you know, you'll take it. Who knows how this actually developed. Okay, now we get into another little lull here. In the 17th, the Mets took Jacoby Long. He's a senior out of Miami, center field tweener type, but without the requisite plate discipline for me to really get excited about it. 800 OPS in the ACC with a couple homers, not a ton of strikeouts or walks, reasonable defense in center. Whatever. Here's the thing, right? Unlike with the pitchers, where if they take a guy I'm not familiar with, I'm at this point willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. They're not there that yet on the hitting front, so I don't quite get this one. This is probably my least favorite pick of day two. I don't know if you guys disagree with that.
I mean,
it's a very whatever player.
It's a college hitter in like the 17th round. Mm-hmm. It kind of is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. In the 18th, they took a prep shortstop, Jace Hampson, out of Lionwood High School in Washington. He's an older prep Oregon commit. I've not seen a ton of buzz on him. I wonder if that means he's actually signable. We'll talk about a guy who almost certainly isn't signable in a couple picks. But I've not come across any information on Hampson, so I don't have any strong opinions here, aside from, you know, the age is a touch concerning.
This is my favorite pick of the third day. And do you want me to talk about this now or
please,
later?
Please go for it. Yes, because I've got nothing to say.
I don't think he's going to Oregon. So Oregon didn't tweet that he got taken.
Reading the tea
leaves. Hold on. A community college did. And he, in his Twitter bio, there's a community college. So I don't think he's going to Oregon. I think he's going there.
Oh.
And they announced him as a pitcher, and he was mostly a hitter in high school. So he only pitched a handful of innings, really. So announcing him as a pitcher instead of a hitter, and that hold on, let me find the community college, because I had it up and then I forgot to save it.
Well, in the meantime, while you're looking for that, the stuff, I don't have any of the underlying metrics like spin, but he has a fastball that's like 90-91, high 80s slider, and then a high 80s curveball. So that's pretty pedestrian. Nothing.
Not awful for a high schooler, but yeah.
No, of course. But
nothing
stand
out.
Nothing to say he's a slam dunk going to college.
So prep baseball Washington, which is like obviously they do prep baseball in Washington State, tweeted that he goes to Everett Community College, and that's who tweeted about him. And they don't have him listed as a UConn commit. They have him listed as an Everett Community College commit. So, if he decommitted from a big school like Oregon, committed to a community college, and then got announced as a pitcher in like round 18 or 16, whatever, I could see them signing him. And that's really interesting to me because he doesn't have a lot of innings on his body. Like, he was mostly a shortstop. So, that combination of things is so intriguing to me that he is easily my favorite pick because it's just different. Like, it's what I do in OOTP, to be honest with you. And when I get to like round 16, I go to the batters and I list them as pitcher potential. And then I go to the pitchers and list it as hitter potential. I see if there's any guys who should be doing the other, and then I'll just draft them. And sometimes you get steals that way. If anyone plays OOTP, that's a cheat code to do that sometimes in the late rounds when they can't pitch or hit or whatever. But it's just so intriguing and weird that I like it, because it's cooler to me than the normal college guy that they would have taken here.
I feel like, so I had not realized this. I'm trying to find the guy. No, crap, I can't find it. It's driving me nuts, but I'm like 99% sure that one of the Dodgers major pitching prospects, and I'm not thinking of Josiah Gray, who they did with this in the past, but as a dude they took that was hitting and immediately turned him into a good pitcher. Maybe it was it wasn't Kyle Hurt, was it? I don't think that's who it was. So if this is indeed what's happening here, Thomas, if you've like pieced this together, first of all, that's some fantastic detective work. Second of all, that's
I did get tipped off that he's not at Oregon, and I was like, I don't see that anywhere because everyone's still tweeting Oregon, and then that's when I like went and looked on my own, and I was like, oh, I don't think he is. I think that person is correct.
Interesting. We're going to talk about what this draft tells us about the Mets overall, you know, front office, the status of their front office, et cetera, et cetera. This would be a next step that I was not necessarily expecting yet. If they're starting to pull, you know, some of these Dodger tricks of uncovering arms in really unconventional places, that's exciting. You've got me very intrigued now, Thomas. I was not expecting this.
Just because it's so like it's like so out of the ordinary, you know.
It's driving me nuts that I'm gonna have to message Jarrett and ask who the hell the guy I'm thinking of is, because he'll know immediately. But yeah, that's fascinating. I really hope that's what's happening here, and I also hope they're actually gonna sign him then. And you know, the decommittal community college thing kind of suggests they are. Maybe they've saved enough money to pull it off.
Like, it says on his max preps, obviously I don't know how updated it is, that he pitched in 3 games this year.
Huh.
Nice.
Then how the hell did they... where did they even because see him throw?
Because he's pitched before. Like,
uh-huh.
Because I was looking him up, and it was like he pitched a bunch in 2021. He pitched in some in 2022. He comes in for games and stuff, and it would like there was one tweet that was like he came right from shortstop and finished the game on the mound, like doing shit like that, like very college high school best player on your team type stuff. But like, it's just so weird and interesting that if I didn't get tipped off, if someone didn't tell me that he's not an Oregon commit, and obviously this person would definitely know, like I should have just believed them at face value, but I was like, this is so weird. I want to know why. It was more like that. I wasn't vetting them. But then I looked and I was like, holy shit, that's so weird, you know? And then I fell down the rabbit hole, and now I'm in.
I'm trying to figure out who the guy I'm thinking of is. But yeah, this is, you've convinced me. I'm now very intrigued. This might be the most Steve, are you going to, I assume you're going to be putting together a signing tracker at some point, or one of us will put together a signing tracker. This might be the most interesting one to watch over the next, you know, couple weeks. Cool.
Have it up.
Wasn't expecting that in the 18th round, so that's nice. Moving to the 19th, we have Frank Ellisalt. I just like this one because it's a D2 bet. You know, again, repeating myself, but looking in these obscure corners trying to find untapped value, I could buy that you found something no one else did at Nova Southeastern University in Florida. Had some of the best fastball spin in the draft league when he was there back in 2022. Fastball spin is not the most important metric, but you know, it's something. He had decent numbers in Division II here, so maybe that's something to look out for. You have any detective work on that front, Thomas, as well, or is he just no. What he is here?
He's a D2 reliever.
Okay,
but that's
fine.
It's a really good D2 program, from what I understand. So
yes, yeah, that's my understanding as well. And then we get to round 20, where the Mets have learned from their failures of their past and took a safety pick. They took Adam Height. Again, not sure. It's Haight. A high school shortstop out of Cedar Park Christian High School, also in Washington. This is a young, model-friendly pick. You know, he's only just turned 18. That's something that, you know, draft models are generally going to approve of. Oregon State commit. There's a good athleticism here. He's got a smooth right-handed swing with some bat speed. Again, I don't have the metrics, but this is all just visual scouting. 94 off the mound. There's real two-way potential here. You know, difficult to say how much because he's a, you know, second-tier prep prospect. This is like 99.5% a safety pick. He's ranked he's rated between 150 to 200 on all of Baseball America, Prospect Live, MLB Pipeline. this is the backup pick in case something happens with Snyder. It's fine. You're not going to get him. Thank you for not pulling a Kumar Rocker.
Yeah, it's literally the last round. You might as well.
The guy I was thinking of was Peyton Martin. Also, River Ryan was a converted shortstop. So the Dodgers have done this a couple times, as well as with Josiah Gray, as I mentioned previously. So this being the shortstop converted to reliever and immediately being a good pitcher. So hopefully that's what's happening with Hampson. And also good that the Mets took a safety pick here in the 20th. So we've reached the end of the draft rounds. The only other name that's been announced so far, the Mets took UDFA Haas Brewer, 80 grade name. I have nothing else to say about him. You guys have any input on Haas Brewer here?
He looks like if someone drew Pete Alonso from Emory. So that's fun.
Now, which version of Pete Alonso? Home run derby winning Pete Alonso or washed home run derby Pete Alonso?
It's a goatee Pete Alonso because Brewer has a very strong reliever goatee, like a 90s reliever goatee. It's real good. It's like real good seventh inning man in 1997 vibes, and I hope it works for almost that reason alone. Like, obviously, I hope it works because I'm a Mets fan, but It would just be so funny to have like a real throwback looking guy in the pen.
That's real. He goes to Seminole State College in Florida, so that's just about the look you'd expect from a dude who goes to Seminole State College in Florida and plays baseball. So yeah, I'm sure we'll get a couple more UDFAs over the next couple days. You can't spend as much money on UDFAs as you used to. I believe the cap is now $20,000. I could be off
real great
on
stuff
that.
From baseball.
Mm-hmm. Got it. It is excellent. I mean, it's partially there so that you're not manipulating guys late in the draft to not to do like what happens in the NBA
like
draft
the NBA,
where
yes, yeah.
Yeah. I
when
get
Rich Paul calls to your team and you're like, "Don't please, you better not draft him. Otherwise, yep. he's not yep. we're going to make a problem for you."
Yep. So I understand the motivation. I'm not sure this was the right solution or if you couldn't set that limit a little bit higher so guys got more money, but that's neither here nor there. We'll get a couple of these over the next couple days, but for the most part, they won't be super material.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh my, look at that, he is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We get it. Distractions happen. That's why we designed the fully electric, full-sized Volvo EX90 with the latest technology to keep you and those around you safe. Its two-sensor driver understanding system is designed to prevent distractions and help you stay focused. Reserve your Volvo EX90 today. Learn more at volvocars.com/US.
After countless steps and more than a few miles, your dog drives you forward one last time to make that final climb. And as the rising sun peeks out from the horizon, you know, incredible happens here because it starts here with the fuel that makes it all possible, Pro Plan Sport. Discover advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours at ProPlansport.com.
This episode is brought to you by Coffee Mate. Coffee Mate is the world's biggest coffee lover. Because we love all the ways you enjoy. Wait. Coffee Mate can't love coffee more than me. I'm a foodie. I went to Kyoto just for a nitro matcha latte. What? Oh, I have to finish the ad. Coffee Mate. For the love of coffee.
Thinking now, bigger picture. And I'll start with you, Steve, because I think Thomas and I talked about this a little bit already yesterday. But what are your impressions of the draft as a whole? You know, you can throw a letter grade on it if you want. Things you liked, things you didn't like. Where are you at?
Like I was saying before, earlier, I am not particularly happy with this draft. I see a lot of flaws in most players, more than I would like, in the earlier rounds. And obviously in the later rounds, you know, expect nothing and whatever you do get is gravy. So, I mean, I would have to say, you know, initial gut reaction without literally any of these guys signing yet or anything like that, I'm going to go with a C minus.
Harsh.
I don't know if a D, I don't know if D is an actual grade, but C minus. Like I said, Benj, I just writing him up, there's a lot of red flags that I see in him that I don't know are going to work with a wood bat in professional baseball. Santucci and Dome, there's good stuff there, but there's also concerns with the health. Serrano, same thing as Benj. I see a lot of red flags in terms of transitioning from college baseball to professional ball. Snyder, prep, shortstop, so whatever you get, you get. And like I said, Collins is the first guy that we're really coming to where I'm like, okay, this guy's cool. But even with him, you know, you're getting a senior signing where power is his calling card. He's batting in front of, you know, he's batting on a very good team with a metal bat. There's just a lot that I'm very hesitant to let myself get excited about. That's a good way of putting it. Hesitant to let myself get excited about.
That's fair. If I had to ask you your favorite pick, would it be Coleman at this point? Collins, not Coleman, excuse me.
Yeah, I know.
Corey Coleman was a random wide receiver, right? For the Browns? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Corey Coleman?
Yeah, I think that's...
Baylor legend?
Yeah, that's it. That's how did I get from Corey Collins to Corey Coleman? Gee, could not be more different in terms of body type either. So no, I'm assuming, Steve, your favorite pick here is Corey Collins so far.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the numbers obviously jump out at you. He's a first baseman that brings a lot of the stock down to begin with. Like I was saying, he was hitting in front of Charlie Condon, so that's going to inflate his numbers. The NCAA, it kind of had very inflated offensive numbers to begin with this year. You know, 20 home runs is really not that impressive, all things considered.
Fair.
I don't know. Santucci, I don't mind. I feel like Santucci's injury risks are, you know, not, you know, he had the, what was it, the rib injury, which is what kept him out this year. Or no, or was it the...
He had elbow and rib problems, elbow, I believe. Right. Yes. He had
bone chips in his elbow, I think it was.
Excellent. Just what you want to hear.
Right. The bone chips was last year. And then this year was the rib injury.
Great.
I mean, he was pitching well before the rib injury, so we can totally say that he's not going to have elbow problems anymore. But maybe, you know, without the specter of those bone chips floating around in his elbow, I could say, I guess, Santucci.
That's fair as well. Least favorite pick, Benj or someone else?
In terms of first rounders? Or
in just... terms of the whole draft, like any Mets picks you really disliked?
Not really. Nothing horrible. I mean, maybe Eli Serrano was drafted too early, but there's not like there was a dearth of talent there that I would say, yes, this guy should have been selected instead, you know?
Okay. So nothing like jumping out as terrible. No, I mean, that's something at least.
Maybe my favorite picks is Jackson Jelkin, just because I want him to fuck shit up and let's just fucking go wild here.
That name just makes me want to punch someone, honestly. JAXON is just brutal. Thomas, overall impressions, favorite pick, least favorite pick. What do you got?
My overall impressions are that I don't think this draft has like the ceiling of other drafts that we've seen them have in recent memory. Like there's no like Jet Williams type guy or something like that, where you're really seeing like this huge future. Like you could kind of see ceiling with someone like that to be like a really, really high end prospect. Of course, stuff happens, but I think there's almost every pick in this draft has some type of possible utility to the organization or to be a future contributor to either the Mets or the high end of or the higher minor leagues or whatever. Like all the pitchers have something interesting and they're relievers that you're going to convert to starters, and if they don't work you'll move them back, and there's interesting fastballs or interesting breaking balls or something like that. Like Benj has he has the defensive prowess to be able to, he might stick in center. If he doesn't, he'll be a plus corner outfield type. And if he doesn't hit as well as you like, then maybe there's some utility as like a fourth outfielder, even though that's not really what you want. Like, there's so much clay in this draft, and I feel like there's no, even the senior sign is, now I'm going to say Corey Coleman, even their first senior sign is like, oh, widely thought of as one of the better senior signs of this draft, because he might actually be a for reals hitter. It's just a limited profile as a left-handed first baseman with no moving, like it's not going to be like an outfielder type situation, like Clifford is even faking it, like he's going to be a first baseman the whole way, first baseman DH type. So I feel like they did a good job of getting a lot of different types of clay to mold, and we just got to figure out if any of them end up anything, if they are able to give pitchers different pitches or maximize some or what have you. But really, for the most part, I don't think there's many players in this draft that you're automatically like, ah, whatever. Like when, like 10 years ago, we're talking about drafts and you could talk about half of day three as you're like, this guy is just going to be whatever. And then he was, you know, like there was really never those drafts that were deep in terms of each player is at least worth looking at and keeping an eye on over the next few years. That's kind of how I feel about it. It's all interesting up and down the board, even if it's not super high ceiling, but I don't think the ceiling was going to be there for them at 19. Like if they ended up where the Guardians picked, or well, not the Guardians because they picked one, if they ended up picking like 7 or something like that, then we're having a different conversation with a top prospect in the draft. But that's just kind of where they ended up. So I think they did a good job of adding a bunch of different types of ways to find something in this draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is they got a little bit screwed.
Yeah, they did.
And that did hurt not only their first-round potential, but their bonus pool, so they can't do as many interesting things throughout.
Like, Cleveland had, like, $18 million in bonus pool money because of... Like, they could do whatever the hell they wanted, and they did. They had a great draft. But, like...
They drafted, like, 6 top 100 players, 7, something
exactly.
like that.
It's like, locked them in as the best draft of the year, even though they picked at 1. Like... Because they did a bunch of interesting stuff outside of that, because this isn't like the NFL or the NBA or any other sport where you just keep picking one. You could do that because of the money, and the Mets just didn't have that chance. But I think they did the best that they could at picking 19 in a mediocre draft overall.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, that sounds like B-ish for you, a little bit better maybe. Is that fair?
It would have been. I don't even know if A was on the table at 19.
Right.
Like, yeah, because...
Such a steep drop.
Yeah, it was such a... And that's no... Like, I think Benj is a top 6 prospect, 7 prospect in the system day one. I think he's going to be very interesting. I'm not as worried about Steve as about the bat, because I think it's much more fixable than a Parada. But, like... It's just it's not a JJ Weatherholt, you know what I mean? Who would be like 1 or 2 in the system day one, you know? Like that's just not really. They didn't have a chance to draft that guy, so it's through no fault of their own. Like, if you want to get mad at DJ Stewart, be my guest, but he's playing for a contract, so don't get mad at him, you know? Because literally anyone in his situation, me, you, Steve, anyone listening to this would have done the same exact thing to try to be employed next year. So it's hard for me to get too mad, even though it's a little annoying now. It just is what it is.
Is anyone actually mad at DJ Stewart?
Actually mad.
They're actually mad. That's
I don't think so. I couldn't imagine. Like, what? Think about it for like 2 seconds, and it's like, yeah, well, of course he's gonna be good, be the, yeah. to the best of his ability.
It's a fun joke, like, ah, mm-hmm. fucking DJ Stewart screwed us out of our draft position, man. But like, the dude.
Whatever.
DJ Stewart's been legitimately a fun Met. I've enjoyed DJ. I understand this may not be universal. I've enjoyed DJ Stewart as a Met, even if his utility has run its course. It's been fun to watch. Anyone who actually is mad at DJ Stewart, reevaluate your decisions a little bit, please. I think I generally agree with what you guys have said here. I am skewing slightly more positive. I was talked into Serrano, even though I was not a fan initially. I've been talked into liking that. I generally like the pitchers they selected. To your point, Thomas, like, given the capital they were allocated at the start of this, difficult for them to get to a high-end outcome. At the same time, if we try to, you know, normalize for where they were starting from, I think they did pretty well. I mean, solid B+. For me, I would think maybe an A-, depending on how things shake out exactly. I mean, I generally like what they've done here. And I think it's actually good that we have a divergence of opinion here for once, because usually we're pretty much a monolith. But Steve doesn't quite agree, and we'll see how it plays out over the next couple years here. If you ask me to call out a favorite pick, I mean, the best pick is... I think the quote unquote best pick to have made is probably Benj. If you want the pick I enjoyed the most, it's either Collins or Roselli, because I have a type and the Mets picked that type. I understand neither of them may ever they may never be more than, you know, org depth, but that's okay. I think those are fun picks. Moving now just to the, you know, bigger picture here, what do we think this draft tells us? I know we talked about this a little bit yesterday, how the Serrano pick and the Snyder pick suggested at who was, you know, in charge of things now within the Mets front office. Is there anything on day three, or, you know, now that we've taken a step back and can see the entirety of the draft, that leads you to any other conclusion but that Chris Gross is really running the ship at this point?
No, that was going to be my conclusion. A lot of the, oh, this is very Gross type stuff that we saw in Houston has carried over.
Mm-hmm.
Like Serrano would be a Houston type pick, I think. And then they would maximize it. Benj is a guy that Houston would maximize. The pitching is the type of pitching that they, that modern organizations like the Brewers and the Mets looked at. So, I mean, Brewers and the Astros, sorry, looked at. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's a new regime, and I think it's very obvious that we didn't even really get the random off the wall picks that were in even the last few drafts. It was very much new people are here and they're doing it the way that they would do it in other orgs. So that's exciting. It's just exciting because it's like a vision. You could kind of look at the draft next year and be like, oh, this is a guy that I think Gross would like, and it's probably on the Mets board, you know, because it's a. All year we talked about, well, we don't really know, we haven't really paid attention to the Astros and Brewers, obviously, because we're Mets fans. We only have so much time not working in baseball. But now it's easier to kind of put two and two together, in my opinion.
Steve, is that rough? I mean, we've obviously all been doing draft stuff for a while, but you do more of it than either Thomas or I with the amount of content you push out. I mean, is that generally your conclusion as well? Do you see something of a... Maybe not in the arms relative to the last couple of years, because Yeager's has been around. But do you see something of a shift towards, you know, more of an Astros or Brewers style philosophy on the offensive side?
Two things. Just, I mean, I don't necessarily have. Well, for the first point, I'll make, yes, I do have the data to who back it up. But the second point, I don't necessarily have that. But there might not also be data to do that. But the first point, one thing that I noticed this year. Was that it was a much safer draft, I guess, if you want to call it, in the second half, you know, rounds 10 to the end. Last year they drafted 1, 2, 3. So three, yes. Last year they drafted 3 high school players that were very gettable gets, I would say, in the second half. And they got two of those three. Whereas this year they drafted the pitcher and the shortstop. What are their names? Since they're not in the organization yet, I don't need to know their names. But Jace Hampson and Adam Haight, the only two. And it just seemed like it was more risk-averse in the back end of the draft. They were just going more for, like the two of you were saying, identifying college, mostly pitchers who had some sort of quality that stands out, and saying, all right, we like that, we'll go with it. And the second point, well, does you have anything to say about that before I move on?
I was just going to say the pitchers also feel kind of different. Like Will Watson and Ryan Lambert are completely different, and it's still they're two interesting pitchers with interesting traits. I think they did a pretty good job of taking unique arms instead of just taking the same type of thing over and over, if that makes sense. Teams are want to do when it's like, oh, he has a high spin rate slider and a high spin rate fastball, and then you get 12 of them, and it's like, well, okay, cool. Like, now it's hard to tell them apart, but I feel like the pitchers this year are more unique than they have been in recent years. I don't know how you guys feel about that. Like, unique towards each other, if that makes sense.
I think that's fair. I get what you're saying, yeah.
It definitely becomes the madness after a while.
But that's also modern baseball. Like, every reliever is the same.
So we're going to just go with it.
I wonder if teams are more, like, smarter teams now are more being like, we could zig and zag a little bit more, because, like, 95 and a wipeout slider is good until every batter faces that for 9 innings every game, then it matters a lot less, you know? Right. Yep. For the actual guy in the box, it's like, well, okay, it doesn't matter if the pitcher is different. It's the same stuff. But, yeah, I was thinking about that. Obviously, I haven't looked at all these guys in depth like that. But it was just thinking about it off the top of my head, looking at the scouting reports of these guys. It was like, oh, all these guys seem a little unique to each other in a way that sometimes you don't see.
That's fair. And they definitely took more injured guys than previous years. And I wonder... I don't think that's an Astros thing, so maybe it's just happenstance, but the uniqueness relative to one another is definitely a good point.
Yeah, that's the second point that I was going to bring up, is that it feels like this draft, I don't want to say they think they're too smart for their own good, because hopefully everything works out, but the many guys that they selected early on that were either injured or guys that need some sort of not necessarily significant change, but some sort of moderate change to either their pitching or their hitting. It seems like there's more of those guys this year than in years past.
Yep. I think that's true. I mean, what that might suggest is that they've developed, how to say this, right? When you're doing any sort of modeling, right, the simpler version of your model is going to have more consistent characteristics that it's going to highlight, right? And as you become more sophisticated, you're going to be able to identify additional archetypes. This is not a baseball-specific comment. This is like a data science-level comment. You could kind of look at the draft last year and just see IVB monster after IVB monster after IVB monster, and that's certainly a method. It might also speak to a lack of sophistication in the methodology, even if we were generally positive on it and it was a step in the right direction. The variance in the types of arms they selected this year suggests to me that they are, you know, more fully fleshing out their evaluation methodology to be able to identify guys of multiple archetypes. You know, and again, we've said that these arms are different, but we're generally able to find things we like about all of them. And if they're all being flagged as positive for different reasons, I think that's an improved iteration on what was already an improvement over the system that existed under Brody and Sandy before that.
Well, and also Gross probably brought over a lot of guys that he was interested in Houston.
Yeah, and it's true.
Like, of course. Like, it's it's one thing to hire someone new, and then it's like, oh, well, we don't know what they're going to do. But Grosso's been scouting these dudes for like a year already. So here he probably was like, oh, yeah, I like this guy when I was looking at him over there. So let's just
draft him. Scouting Serrano for like four years at this point. So that they went to the same high school as Clifford.
Yeah. And so it's probably one of those things where he always liked him there. And it was like, well, okay, perfect. Like, it doesn't really matter that the team's different. It's the same thing for him. And that's when we were talking about on day one, it's like, are the Mets the team to fix bench like the Astros were? And Gross is not going to think about, he is going to think about it more than that, but his job is to get the prospect in the door. It's on Stearns and everyone else to do the stuff after. And I would assume, like, obviously Gross isn't just going to wipe his hands with it and go away, but he has to worry about next year's draft, and he has to worry about other things. And so, like, that's where it's in tandem, and that's where the development is going to be on the Mets organization as a whole, but the draft is going to be, I think, much more modern than it has been even in the last 2 years.
Yep. I think that's all right. Okay, I think that's plumbing the depths on the Mets front. Let's real quickly just reflect on the draft as a whole. And for purposes of this, let's put aside the Guardians, because they had just such
one
an... I'm going to pull up, just because it's the easiest way to do this. Oh my god. Alright, so of the rankings I've referenced that we use, I would say Pipeline, certainly not my favorite ranking source, right? I would turn to BA or BP first. But the MLB Draft Tracker is the quickest way to do it, so I'll do it this way. They got Travis Bazzano, the first-ranked prospect, Braylon Doughty, the 36th-ranked prospect, Jacob Cosart, the 42nd-ranked prospect, Joey Oki, the 46th-ranked prospect, Charles Mobley, the 80th-ranked prospect, Rafe Schlesinger, the 147th-ranked prospect, and Aiden Major, I don't know how to pronounce his name, the 245th-ranked prospect. They also got an interesting guy in Bennett Thompson later on. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys in Pipeline's top 100, an additional 2 guys who were in their top 250. And they got arguably the best prospect in the draft.
I mean, it's video game shit. It's what people do when they can cheat a video game out, and they just happen to win the lottery and get that in real life. Like,
this is what happens when you are a team that isn't actually that bad, have a down year where you're ranked 9th, win the lottery, and oh, by the way, also you have a comp pick that just blows up your pool even more. Suddenly you're doing all sorts of wild shit. So the Guardians had an incredible draft. Are there any other teams that stand out to you as having particularly good drafts? I'm going to call out the Diamondbacks for the second year in a row. I really love what they did. Mm-hmm. They got Slade Caldwell and Ryan Walchman up front. Of course, I'm going to like that. They also got J.D. Dix in the comp A round. They got Daniel Egan in the third round. I'm shocked he was still there in the third, honestly. They got a couple. Connor Foley was another name I liked in the fifth. I really like what the Diamondbacks did overall. They stuck out. There's one other team that I think that one of you might mention in a second here, but the Diamondbacks were one of the non-Guardians teams that I thought killed it.
Yeah, I agree. They had a really good draft.
Any other teams that jump out to you guys as standouts here?
I like what the Tigers did.
The Tigers, huh? Okay, wasn't expecting that one.
Floating Rainer to 11 is really nice for them. That's getting him at 11 is really good for the draft. And then, like, Michael Massey, your guy in the fifth round, is an interesting shout. Jackson Strong is an interesting shout. Like, they had some interesting shouts, I think. And they also did a lot of, they went pitcher heavy after. Like, it was Rainer and then 2 prep pitchers and a college pitcher. Like, I just think that they did things that are a little better than what they normally do, and I want to shout them out. And also, like I said, getting Rainer at 11 is like that's pretty much a steal.
Yep, I agree with that. Steve, was there anyone that jumped out to you?
I mean, I'm having enough problems with the Mets draft.
That's very fair.
I remember on night one, we were saying that the Mariners had a very good first round, second round, whatever, but it does not look like they really kept
I did
going.
Not. I did not love the rest of their draft.
No, yeah, totally they did good early, and then it faded for me.
Two others I want to call out, and again, these are this is another pair of teams that I think have become pretty consistently good at this. The Reds got six top 100 guys of their own. Chase Burns, Tyson Lewis, Luke Holman, Mike Sirota, Peyton Stovall, and Tristan Smith. I would like that more if they hadn't taken Burns at two. Like, if that was... Yeah, Condon or Weatherholt. Like, they presumably could have taken Weatherholt there and still had enough money to do all the other stuff they did, and I would have liked that even more. But that's objectively a nice outcome. And then, flipping it the other way, the Brewers somehow always do this, where they start off the draft and you're asking yourself, what the fuck are the Brewers doing? And you finish the draft and you're like, holy shit, all the names I liked are on the Brewers. Yeah. Now I have to judge them slightly harshly because they took Chris Lavonis, who went to CBA in New Jersey, which was a rival high school for me. Like I literally grew up 10 minutes away from CBA and almost went there myself. I'm very glad I didn't. So I have to judge them a little bit for taking someone from there. But overall, they just continue to draft really nice prep players, and somehow they're going to have the money to sign all these dudes. Like, it's incredible.
Well, they really cut in the first round, so that'll help them.
I mean, they cut, and they still got, like, a top 50-ish prep guy in his own right. And
yeah, but it was just nobody expected him to go, what was it? 14 or whatever it was,
17. And you and I had talked about this like a couple weeks prior, though, where in this draft, where it's kind of underwhelming after whatever 12 or whatever the cutoff was, there was an argument you should just cut in the late teens and use that money elsewhere. And I think the Brewers adopted that strategy. They also had two comp round A and B picks, which makes this easier. But they really spread that money around effectively. And you know, just another very nice draft for the Brewers. Jason DeBerry is a name to keep an eye on as well in the third. I think that's could be one of the steals of the draft.
I mean, it's most of the teams that we named here are at least competitive. Like the Tigers aren't really, but the Diamondbacks were just in the World Series, and a lot of that was based on their drafts. And and we're talking about good teams, and like the Reds are a competitive team and a very young and exciting and interesting team, and the Brewers are always good now. And so it's one of those things where with baseball, man, it's just if you're a good organization, you'll figure out a way to draft correctly, even if you're picking at 19 like the Mets are, or picking at one like the Guardians were. Like,
oh, wow.
Like, it's... What happened?
Oh, no, I'm looking at the Brewers draft, and literally everybody from 13 on is just a high school player. It's like what I was saying before with the Mets, where they didn't do that. Now you have the Brewers doing exactly the opposite. Everybody's a high schooler.
Yep.
Just but roll the dice and see what happens.
It's just, to me, it's I think it's almost, it doesn't matter where you draft in baseball, because the good teams will find the value and find ways to figure it out, and the bad teams will mess things up. Like, the A's had a rough draft, and the Nationals had a rough draft, and it's like, well...
And the Angels exist.
Yeah, and the Angels drafted like relievers that are going to be up in the majors in like 2 months. And it's just kind of like, well, and the Mets were like this forever. Like, I'm not trying to throw stones here for most of our lives, the Mets have been doing shit like that. And it was like, oh my God, another draft where it doesn't matter where they're getting like nobody. It's like if they're not hitting on their first rounders, which they kind of did more often than you would think for a team that drafted pretty poorly, they were getting nothing from everyone else, basically.
It was Daniel Murphy and end
like
of
McNeil
list.
And
Jeff oh, McNeil I meant I meant too. Jeff McNeil in the last slide. Jeff McNeil is who I was thinking of, but yes, it's those two second basemen and fuck all else.
Yeah, like for the most part, all the people taken past round one or even round two sometimes were just bad.
And so in the last, I have the data open in here because I was going to bring it up. In the last 10 years, these are the players that the Mets drafted that actually went on to become something after the 10th round. So in the last couple of years, that's 10 picks. And then pre-2020, that's literally 30 picks.
30 picks, right? Yeah. God, the draft used to be so fucking long.
The last guy And I don't know how much we can credit the Mets or how much to credit another organization, but the last guy was a 17th rounder who was drafted in 2018, Alan Winans.
Ah, okay.
Before that, we had 37th rounder in the 2017 draft, Josh Walker.
Yeah, okay. That's a good shout.
Sure.
2016, he didn't sign, but the Mets drafted George Kirby. Obviously, he's good.
All right, that doesn't, taking high schoolers that you're not going to sign doesn't count.
Right. In 2015, they had three guys in the late rounds. Two of them didn't sign with the Mets.
There Hunter Barco is one of them, right?
Hunter Barco, no, yep.
He was much later. Shane McClanahan.
One draft. Barco, right?
Shane McClanahan is in the 26th round, and Jeff Hartlieb in the 37th round.
Hartlieb, right. I forgot about him. That's it.
But the one that they did hit on was 13th rounder PJ Conlon.
Oh, good. this is rough.
That's what I'm saying. Like, bad teams stay bad in the draft, and good teams figure out ways. And the Mets were a bad team for a really long time with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had DeGrom really late, but I mean, come on. Like, drafting maybe the best pitcher of our generation in that late is, it's not your fault.
It's fluky.
Yeah, it's just lucky. Which, of course, you also have to be lucky. Anyone drafting this late being good, they're lucky and they're good. Like, it's both.
Yep. Well, I think overall this has been, I mean, Steve's going to disagree, but I think overall this has been another, even if the players are not the best, Steve, would you agree that the Mets are showing more of the forward-thinking processes we'd like them to, relative to previous iterations of the front office?
I mean, if we're talking about, like, pre-2020 drafts, 100%, because there was no Matt Winokurs and Quinn Brodies in, like, you know, the third round and the fourth round. So that's always appreciated. Like we were saying earlier, I think we've kind of been spoiled the last 2 years. They had very good drafts. We saw a coherent plan. They got basically everyone that they wanted to get. Like I was saying, I feel like there was a lot of too smart for our own good kind of picks with this one. But at the same time, that does suggest that there's something that they're looking at that they believe other people are not. So that suggests that there's a plan and, you know, some kind of model, like you were saying before, Lucas, that they think is churning out, you know, info on players that's, you know, hitting all of the things that they want to see.
I wonder if they're just not caring a lot about injuries because pitchers are going to get hurt anyway.
Yep.
Like taking the healthy pitcher who has worse stuff over the hurt pitcher who has better stuff. The healthy pitcher who has worse stuff is also going to be the hurt pitcher soon. Like, that's just the name.
There are no healthy pitchers.
Yeah, like, all of them are pitching with some type of arm issue because it's not a natural thing to do as a human. So I wonder if an organization like that is being more forward-thinking is willing to be like, hey, who cares if the guy had bone chips in his elbow? So is the other healthy guys around them. And you're getting more upside this way? Like, you're actually taking a swing on upside and first-round arm talent?
Right. It's definitely a way to take a talent who's, when healthy, would be going at a higher draft position. And it's a way to cut down on how much that you would have to pay the player because you are, you know, they're bargaining from a much weaker position.
Yeah. I mean, and look at Tidwell. Like, it was the same thing. We were like, oh, he's hurt all the time. And he hasn't been hurt once as a Met, knock on wood. Like, he's been super healthy, you know? And so this stuff, injuries don't beget under other injuries usually. Like, sure, if the guy's elbow hurts, it's not great, but that doesn't mean he's going to blow his arm out. Just means that he might be able to fix it, and then it's fine. So.
Yep.
Here's hope.
Yep. Well, on that semi-positive note, we'll wrap up our final draft recap show. We will be back to our more normally scheduled programming starting this weekend or next. We may take a week off after this. Who knows? We've done a lot of podcasting here. As always, you can listen to or subscribe to this show or all the shows in the Home Run Applesauce podcast network through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whichever platform you use. We also encourage you to rate and review the show since it helps new viewers find it. You can visit our Patreon for bonus episodes, and also that will directly support the network. We will be having a special draft recap episode there as well that will hopefully go up tomorrow night. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, draft-related or otherwise, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Saipa. I am at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSCN. Until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.